have been told that things here have become much worse.
Things are better than there ever have been, Gnosis.
No.
We have order.
Order? Order? The slaves, their bodies burn night and day now. I've seen it with my own eyes. You call that order?
The slaves.
No,
what would you expect?
They're Egyptians. They should be treated as Egyptians. They should have the same rights. They should be paid for their work, or you must set them free.
They're not Egyptians. They are slaves, Moses. What else do you expect? They wouldn't know what to do if all of a sudden they were left to fend for themselves like animals.
Do not call them animals!
Listen, from an economic standpoint alone, what you're asking, it's problematic to say the least.
I didn't expect to hear a simple yes. But I do not want to hear a simple no. Is that what you're telling me? Are you saying no?
I'm not saying no. I'm saying time. Time. You're listening to Hebrews.
I'm listening to Hebrews.
Who are you talking to?
God.
Hello, and welcome to The Collision, Collider's podcast about movies, TV, and more. I'm the site's managing editor, Matt Goldberg, and with me today is senior editor, Adam Chitwood.
Howdy.
Today we will be talking about Exodus, Gods and Kings, as well as the filmography of director Ridley Scott, and we will also touch on the film's religious themes, or lack thereof. So, starting with Exodus, Gods and Kings, my reviews on the site, I did not like the movie pretty much at all. Adam, what did you think of it?
Well, first of all, sorry, it's been a while that we've been on, folks. We tried to record a podcast last weekend and had some technical difficulties. We recorded it, you just won't hear it because it doesn't exist.
But we will, just to give you a heads up, the podcast was about lesser seen films this year that we really liked and wanted to bring your attention. We will still have that information. We're just going to do it as an article rather than as a podcast. So
indeed,
you'll still get the information, just in a different format.
Yes. But Exodus, Gods and Kings, boy, was that boring. just uninteresting. And then, like, I went in with an open mind. It was like, yeah, you know, like, I, you know, everyone doesn't like it, but maybe it'll be worthwhile or at least interesting. But it just wasn't. Just he just brought, I mean, this is a story that everybody knows and it's been told a million times, and he didn't tell it in an interesting way. And that casting is so bizarre. Just not, I mean, not even the offensive part of casting white people, just like, why is Aaron Paul playing Joshua? And why does he have like five lines? Why is Sigourney Weaver in the movie to stand in the background?
Why cutting room floor, I have to imagine.
I assume so, but it's still just so weird. Like John Turturro as the
That's
Pharaoh.
Pretty funny.
Like,
that's
I was,
pretty funny.
I kept waiting for him to just to turn to his servant and say, like, I like feet. I don't know why. Just that accent was just so, it just reminded me of his Mr. Deeds character, and it was just so random. It's just terrible casting. The whole movie was terribly cast. Christian Bale was fine as Moses. It didn't, like, that's the thing, is Christian Bale is a really interesting, good actor, but this movie managed to make even him boring. And I don't know if that's because the character of Moses is boring or just because the story's been told so many times.
The character of Moses is not boring at all in the Bible. The character of Moses is actually quite fascinating. He is the reluctant leader, as this film barely indicates. This Moses is handsome, smart, wise, charming. Just the only thing wrong with him is he takes him like a little while to accept the fact that he has to lead the Jews. Like, he goes into the desert, you know, he has to take his time. But other than that, and then he teaches them to be warriors, which is so fucking stupid. But in the Bible, Moses has a speech impediment. That's why he needs his brother Aaron to speak for him. Think about that. A leader who we always assume leadership is with great oratory. I mean, look at Jesus, the Sermon on the Mount. That is, and of course, that transfers to all leaders, that we like to believe that they have to be eloquent. And Moses isn't. And
he's
Moses,
the George W. Bush of the Old Testament,
without being stupid,
yeah.
Without being egregiously stupid. Sorry, got political.
It wasn't even political. It was just he, like, Bush is not a good orator. Like, he just is not good at speaking. But
yeah, I mean, but with Moses, I would also say Moses doesn't get into Canaan. He doesn't get into Canaan. God doesn't let him in. Now, that's obviously far down the road, but Moses does a couple things that angers God. It's an interesting character, and basically Ridley Scott said, you know what, I just want to do Maximus again. Can we do Maximus again? I think so. Just the exiled general who comes back and gets his revenge on the emperor. I'm sorry, Pharaoh. Pharaoh, can we do that? Is that, are we good with that, everyone?
Except okay, this yeah. time he's a crazy person who talks to rocks.
Exactly. Except not. Because, see, that is moderately interesting. The possibility of being interesting is Moses crazy. And I think Noah played with that as well. This notion of, by the way, as we saw between Noah and Exodus, if you do follow God, you have to grow a crazy Old Testament beard. That's important. Just let the beard go wild.
I don't think razors are in heavy supply in those times. With the poor folks.
I don't know, man. They look pretty good before they start answering the call. I mean, Moses was like, he had like that sexy short beard going on. Like, and then he let himself go. But with Exodus, it could have started out like, oh, is Moses crazy? Unfortunately, the movie in the first minute opens with titles explaining the history. The Jews have been enslaved for 400 years. And then God has not forgotten them. So, as fact, no character says this. The film is telling us in no uncertain terms that God exists in this movie. So, therefore, Moses is not crazy. Other people may think he's crazy because they can't see him talking to, by the way, the burning bush appears for 5 seconds, and then they're like, no, let's do it as a little kid. And they don't see him talking to little kid God. So they think he might be crazy. And let's even back up even further. It's not they, it's Joshua. That's it. So that completely valid thread, which would have given this movie perhaps a hint of personality, is gone.
Yeah, it's... I don't know if it's lays on Ridley Scott's part of just, you know, just not interested in like, looking back on something like Gladiator, like, that's a movie that is not a big action epic. Like, it's, at its heart, is an intimate character story. And it's really interesting and fascinating. And Ridley Scott wants to delve into really interesting character machinations. With Exodus, it just seems like he's not interested in doing it, or he's just going through the motions of just like, he goes, you know, falls in love, gets married, then he's going to go away, then he's going to come back. And it's just, none of it is interesting. That was my problem with this movie, is I don't think it was a terrible, like, just awful, awfully made movie. I just think it was just incredibly boring and not interesting. There was nothing that was compelling me throughout this 150-minute runtime.
The only thing I thought was interesting, and I don't think it was intentional, I don't think Scott intended this to be something in his film that people could latch onto, but the notion of Moses as warrior, and that liberation can only be achieved through violent means, and that this is an angry God who really has no patience for anyone, Egyptians, Jews, he's just a violent guy, and Moses is a general. I mean, that to me, a really striking line in the script and in the film is when God tells Moses, I need a general. And Moses is a shepherd at this point, and that's the idea of Moses. Moses is a shepherd leading the flock out of Egypt. That's what shepherds do. They lead. And in this one, he's getting a general, a different kind of leader, a leader who must kill. I thought that was interesting. Nothing builds on it, but I liked that it was at least there, even though I don't think Scott really did anything with it beyond just letting it sit there.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what the script development of this movie was like, because there are four credited screenwriters. Steven Zalian's on there, but I have to assume that he was just brought on to make it workable, to make it into something that they could actually shoot. But, I mean, here's the thing. Scott got Damon Lindelof got a lot of shit for Prometheus. He wrote Prometheus. But if you watch the making of documentaries on that Blu-ray, you see that everything that is happening is Ridley Scott, is dictated by Ridley Scott. Like, he is not making a movie that is written. He is making a movie he wants to see. Like,
on
in the
fly.
Yeah, and in the Prometheus extras, you see him in, you know, development with concept art, telling them that he wants the ship to be rolling towards, what is it? I think Charlize Theron's character.
Charlize Theron. Yeah.
Yeah, he has a set piece in his mind, and he wants that. And now a lot of people were like, oh, that was so stupid. Why wouldn't you just run to the side? Why would Lindelof write that? But he wrote it because Ridley Scott wanted it. Like, that is the screenwriter's job. So I don't think that Scott is just being handed bad screenplays. I think he's just not making very good movies. Like, what he's interested in, I could totally see him sitting there in development on this movie being really excited and fascinated by the prospect of visualizing these plagues, visualizing this world. And I think that he just didn't really care about the characters that much, which explains why we would cast someone like John Turturro or Ben Mendelsohn
Mendelsohn
epic.
Was at least fun.
Why
cast him? Why cast anyone? Exactly. Yeah. I mean, let's back up a little bit to his super racist comments about why he didn't cast Egyptian actors, which was like something like, I didn't cast, you know, Ali Muhammad.
Jewish actors. He didn't even meet halfway.
No, he didn't meet halfway. I understand. And Christian Bale put the point eloquently and sympathetically, which was, there is an economic reality here that while it would be good to see these bigger actor, like good to see lesser known actors, but actors who fill the roles racially, that's just not what can be done right now. They need stars. I would say the middle ground would have been, and obviously this isn't Bale's decision, but to me a good middle ground would have been, I'm going to cast Christian Bale as Moses, but I'm going to cast an international actor, like an Israeli actor or an Arab actor, to play Pharaoh. And it's not because Pharaoh is... first off, Pharaoh would definitely need some better screenwriting. I think everyone does, but he's such a stupid character. So in that way, a character dodges a bullet. But let's also be honest. Joel Edgerton is not a star.
No.
No one knows who Joel Edgerton is. And this is not a move. This isn't like Rosewater, where Jon Stewart basically said Gael Garcia Bernal captured the spirit of Mazyar Bahari, who is a living person and, you know, signed off on this movie, was involved with its making, and ultimately you needed Gael Garcia Bernal to get the little bit of financing that you could to get that movie made. Okay, not an ideal, but understandable. Ridley Scott, like, I just don't think it's not interesting to him. And so it's just like, okay, good enough. What I really want to do is show you the plagues in a really weird fashion, by the way, to come back to the religious angle. So the first six, you have Ewan Bremner trying to explain to the audience, like, oh, this could have scientifically happened. And I'm like, okay, I guess this is a carryover from an earlier script where, again, God is ambiguous. And I think there are these holdovers. And it's like, okay, you're presenting an Exodus where the plagues could be scientifically explained, starting with a plague of gators, which was surprising.
The jig is up by the final plague, where it's, you know, children just stop breathing.
No, the plague is up by the time they hit darkness. The moment, they don't even get to the final plague. Like, when they get to plague, like, seven, and Pharaoh has had enough, he's lost his patience at this point with all the other plagues, and clearly they wrote themselves into a corner. They can't figure out a scientific explanation for the final few plagues. And obviously, yeah, when you get to death of the firstborn, unless you want to blame fucking colic, it doesn't have anything, because you wrote yourself into a corner, and that's the end of it. And it's a half-developed idea that you just need to drop, and just leave it unexplained. Maybe that's just how shit's gonna go down here. But again, it's just a bunch of half-assed ideas, and I believe the ultimate service of Exodus is Ridley Scott wants to do things. That's what I get from Ridley Scott, is he wants to do things. He doesn't want to necessarily tell complete stories, but he wants to do things. Like with Robin Hood, he wanted to make... Robin Hood had a fascinating original concept. The original concept behind Robin Hood, by the way, who the fuck is interested in Robin Hood as Robin Hood? There are competing Robin Hood projects now in Hollywood. Blows my fucking mind. But Robin Hood starts off as an interesting premise. With this original script with Robin Hood, it was called Nottingham, and the film was from the perspective of the Sheriff of Nottingham, who is a detective trying to stop a thief. That's interesting. Like, how we've never thought of the story that way, to come from a different perspective. And yes, Robin Hood is a criminal. A sheriff is supposed to catch a criminal. That's interesting. And then at one point, like, Russell Crowe was supposed to play both roles, both Robin Hood and Nottingham. He started out as Nottingham, and then as the script developed and developed and developed.
Or Nottingham was going to turn out to be Robin Hood, I think.
Exactly.
It
just kept going through all these permutations. And eventually, we got Ridley Scott saying,
I want to make a movie about archery.
That's my bad Ridley Scott impression. He wanted to make a movie
very,
about
archery. Very British sounding.
He's very British. I want to make a movie about archery. No more impressions. And Robin Hood sucks. It is an awful movie. And no one cared about it. And oh, although I do like in Robin Hood basically creates the Magna Carta. That was fun. So,
well, now I want to see it.
Now you want to see it? You don't want to see it. You think you want to see it. But I'm telling you, a scene in a movie that is a fucking slog. You'd be better off watching Robin Hood Men in Tights. As would we all. It's a delightful movie. So, I don't think Ridley Scott is interested. And I think that it's not necessarily that he can only make bad movies, but it's like Prometheus. Like you're saying, Prometheus is this Frankenstein monster of like, ooh, I kind of want to do this, and ooh, where'd the space jockey come from, and ooh, like it's not, he's not telling a complete story.
But Prometheus is at least interesting. I still kind of like Prometheus, and it's really gorgeously shot. Like
His movies are. He is a great visual filmmaker.
Exodus is not. Exodus.
Exodus is fine. I don't think it's ugly. I think the production value in Exodus comes through.
I disagree. I think Exodus is not a good-looking movie. And I was fully expecting it to be, because most of his films are, but I was really disappointed. I think that Prometheus shows a much more confident direction, much more bold, whereas Exodus was just kind of Ridley... It felt like Ridley Scott was just pulling from things that he had done before. Whereas, you know, Prometheus feels very different from Alien. It doesn't feel like he's making Alien again. Exodus feels like, you know... He's like, and I'll take a dash of Kingdom of Heaven, and I'll take half of Gladiator, and I'll, you know, mix these all together. But
I wish he had thrown in a dash of Matchstick Men, so Moses could tell Pharaoh, "Have you ever been dragged out? Have you ever been beaten till you shit, till you piss blood?"
I really like Matchstick Men.
Matchstick Men is good. It's good for what it is.
Well, yeah. And this is the thing. His Ridley Scott's filmography is odd. He's one of these filmmakers that we think, I mean, we hold up as kind of, you know, we hold him in high standards, but his filmography is so weird. He's almost like, it's like he toes the line between being a journeyman director and then being, you know, because I don't think you can look at something like A Good Year and then look at something like Black Hawk Down and see that those are the same filmmakers. Those feel like very different movies. But I mean, we know that he's capable of greatness. We've seen Alien, we've seen Blade Runner. Thelma and Louise is fantastic. That was, you know, a departure for him, but in a good way. He showed that he's very comfortable with just characters when you peek back.
Gladiator's great. Kingdom of Heaven Director's Cut is great. American Gangster is great.
We know that he's capable of doing all of this. I just don't know why. I think Exodus was a mistake from the word go. I just think going to this biblical epic, it's just retreading territory. That feels like...
Well, I think it's not... To me, it's not necessarily a matter of retreading territory. I think it is rich material. I think it's very rich material. It's just you have to work a little harder. You have to find...
Well, I think it's retreading for Scott. Not the story itself, but for Scott. To see Scott take on this biblical epic, it's just kind of... It's retreading territory that he's done before, especially the take that he decided on doing.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just something where... Especially what's interesting for Scott... is Scott has options. Scott always keeps a lot of projects on his plate that he wants to do. And obviously, like, financing is a concern. But if he wanted to do a smaller movie, he could. But he chose to do Exodus, which doesn't seem to really be challenging him in any significant way. I'm with you. I don't understand what the interest is for him in Exodus.
Well, and after Exodus, and I admit I haven't seen The Counselor. I've heard mixed things about The Counselor. I've heard the director's cut is better, which is
I've not seen the director's cut.
Well, and this is also something that's troubling. It seems like Scott is churning
makes movies for the director's cut.
Yeah, he edits the movie the studio wants, and he's okay if he doesn't like it. It feels like he's just kind of like, I'll release this. It's fine. I don't care. I'll put it in theaters.
Maybe that was a lesson. I mean, that's a lesson perhaps he learned a long time ago with Blade Runner, which is I have to release the movie a studio wants, but that doesn't mean I have to lose the movie I want.
Sure, but I think you can have it both ways if you look at a filmmaker like David Fincher or Martin
Scorsese. You absolutely can, but I think he's going the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
Which is, I'll make their movie and then I'll make my movie. And everyone wins because the studio can double dip it. And
true.
It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because, and as we've been saying with Exodus, it looks like there's a lot on the cutting room floor.
Oh yeah.
I mean, and it's a fucking long movie, don't get me wrong, but I can handle a longer movie if it's more compelling throughout.
Yeah, like what was Sigourney Weaver doing there? What was her purpose? What are her scenes? Like, why did he get her? I mean, this is a big deal. He's reuniting with Sigourney Weaver after all these years. And she has... It's got to be less than five lines.
I'm in the movie more than she is.
Yeah, it's less than five lines. I was genuinely counting Aaron Paul's lines because before, like, the third act, he's basically like looky-loo Joshua, who's just staring at Moses talking
about
a rock.
Just kind of pokes his head in. Ben Kingsley doesn't have really much to do at all.
He serves as the impetus, but it felt like... It feels like there's more with him later on. Like, now thinking about it now, when Moses comes back, that's basically it for Ben Kingsley's character. He's like, welcome back. I'm going to disappear now.
Right, exactly. And I think that maybe this is a case of, like, Kingdom of Heaven. The Kingdom of Heaven, the theatrical cut, is not a good movie. The director's cut is fantastic. It's amazing how much better it is. It's like night and day to sort of see how the edit can change the quality of this film. And maybe that'll be the case with Exodus. Maybe it's the case with The Counselor. Here's the thing about The Counselor. I didn't like The Counselor that much either, and I am not super eager to return to it, partially because it's just a really dark film. And while I don't think that's necessarily a reason to avoid it, I have a lot of other movies I'd prefer to watch in the meantime. So, like, I gotta go rush out and see The Counselor director's cut. Counselor's a weird movie, Adam. I think you should see it.
It has been, like, I recorded it when I was on HBO, and I was like, oh, I'll watch this this weekend. That was 3-4 months ago. It's because it's a dark movie, and I've heard it's very, like, talky and weird. Like, I want to see it, but I'm like, eh. I was like, you know what? I haven't listened to the audio commentary on This Is the End yet. Maybe I'll watch that instead. So
pretty much, yeah.
But Exodus, I can't even see myself, even if people are saying the director's cut is great, I can't see myself wanting to go back to it because it was just such a slog. It's not like there's avenues of it that I wish were explored more fully or more. I don't think the central story is that interesting. I mean, Moses story is interesting, but the way he does it is not interesting.
Unless people tell me that the Exodus, if people were to say the Exodus director's cut is great, because that's what they told me about Kingdom of Heaven director's cut, is that it's great. And I'm like, okay, I'll check it out. If people were to say the Exodus director's cut is great, I would give it another shot. Because again, I believe in the story. And I don't think it is a story without merit. And perhaps there is something there. That being said, I still wouldn't be eager to return to it. There's just so many other things to watch in the world.
Half an hour more John Turturro. Well, and even, the dedication at the end of the movie is touching, then, that Ridley Scott dedicates the movie to his brother Tony. And maybe, I mean, it kind of starts to feel like at the beginning I was like, oh, this is a brother story. But not really.
Nope, that gets discarded real fast.
And, like, that would have been a really fascinating turn, especially from Ridley. I mean, I'm sure it is – that can't be something that's easy to live with now, and especially since it just happened 2 years ago. And that would have been really interesting to see him explore that. Maybe he didn't feel comfortable doing it. Maybe he wasn't interested in it. But I feel like that from Ridley Scott would have been more fruitful.
And here's the thing about Ridley Scott. What he's got visual style. He's got an eclectic filmography. But I think the thing that makes him journeyman is, what is the personal tone of Ridley Scott? Where is he as a filmmaker? If I talk about Christopher Nolan, I can say his films are cold. His films are intellectual in the sense of they're cerebral.
Yeah, extremely intellectual.
Yeah. But I can sense there's a frozen heart beneath all of it.
Yeah.
But I know what that is. I don't know who Ridley Scott is. I don't know him as a filmmaker. I don't know what, if he makes personal statements with his movies. I don't think he goes there.
That's true.
I think he can make movies that deliver emotional impact. But I think that for him, I think he puts a distance between himself and the material. And he can direct things to the best of its ability, but I think he keeps himself guarded from it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, because you look at Alien, and you're like, oh, this is a really great horror director. And then he does Blade Runner, and you're like, oh, no, this is a really great sci-fi director. Then he does Thelma and Louise, and you're like, what? He can do comedy.
And I think it's fine to genre hop.
Yeah.
Like, I think Woody Allen...
But what you're saying is there's no like, oh, this feels like a Ridley Scott film. And I mean, even Hannibal, which obviously Hannibal, he stepped in to someone else's world there. But Hannibal feels super... I mean, that might be the most journeyman film of his filmography, in that it's just kind of... It feels kind of by the numbers.
Right. And I think that you can do different kind of movies. Like, Woody Allen does, like, weird... His comedies, he does dramas. But I get a sense of who Woody Allen is as a filmmaker. If you look at his whole filmography... And I think Woody Allen is similar to Ridley Scott in the way that they both work... They crank out a movie a year, and they're not all gems. But that doesn't mean they've necessarily lost it.
Yeah.
Unlike Clint Eastwood, who hasn't made a good film since the early 90s. So that's, I think there are filmmakers who necessarily, I don't think Ridley Scott is just doing this to keep busy or anything like that. But on the other hand, I think what interests him about movies, about a film he's making, isn't the holistic film. He seizes on something in particular that doesn't necessarily lend itself to the overall narrative. I think every filmmaker is captured by some aspect of it, and then they try to express that in the larger story. I think Ridley Scott just wants to focus on his thing. I think in this, I see him seizing on the epic visual effects that this story can provide, and then everything else is perfunctory.
Yeah, which makes me... not wary, but curious of The Martian, his next movie, because that cast is great. Like, he's got...
He can assemble a cast.
Yeah. Who else? Matt Damon.
Matt Damon, Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Chiwetel, yeah, that's what I was trying to remember. So it's a great cast, which, I mean, that already you're up on Exodus there with... I mean, out of all those people in Exodus, like, Christian Bale makes sense, but... Like you were saying, why cast Joel Edgerton?
And I have nothing against Joel Edgerton as an actor. I think he's a solid actor, but he's totally wrong for this part.
And also, if Scott's excuse for casting white people was, oh, you know, they won't let any, like, it's a non-starter. First of all, it's offensive that he didn't even try to cast someone else. But saying that you need names, Joel Edgerton is not a name. Nobody knows who this guy is.
Maybe one day, but certainly
yeah.
not now.
That's not a draw in any territory. But I digress.
Yeah. It's, well, I think it comes back to a larger point. I don't think casting was a primary interest for Scott here. I think he assembled people. I think he's like, okay, these are fine. People like Aaron Paul, Ben Kingsley's solid. I'm making my story. I feel there's more energy put into the parting of the Red Sea than there is in any piece of casting.
Yeah.
Because the characters don't really matter in this movie.
Sure. Which is kind of the opposite of Noah, which was all about character, And even though I didn't love Noah, I thought it was a really fascinating take on the Noah
Absolutely.
story.
Absolutely.
First of all, the Noah story hasn't been told a lot on film. Second of all, that movie, I mean, it's so you could argue that Exodus is ambiguous without ambiguity. You could also argue that Noah is semi-ambiguous, but it works equally as a religious film and as a fantasy film. Like, it works both ways. It's really inventive and really fascinating. And again, I didn't love the movie. I didn't walk away super satisfied with it, but I'm glad that it exists. Whereas Exodus feels like a waste.
And it feels like it's a director challenging himself. I look at that film, and I know Darren Aronofsky's heart is in it.
Yeah.
I may not agree with all of his choices, but he made them. And he's trying to do interesting things with a story we haven't really seen before. And I like that. It's my least favorite Darren Aronofsky film, but I respect it. Exodus, I would forget that story had it not come from the fucking Bible. That's it. It's like, it doesn't need to exist. This is just like, this is keeping busy. That's the thing. It's just, I'm doing this to, I don't know why this film, why he's doing this. And it just sort of, it's saddening. And again, what does this film look like in its initial form? It's one of those things where it's like, get me, if it wouldn't take days and days and days to read all the drafts of the screenplay, it would be fascinating to see its development. Because clearly what we're seeing here, even in terms of a final edit, is not the final film. I would say the question, though, with the director's cut is that this film does have a lot of visual effects. Could it even be completed? Whereas The Counselor is pretty low on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I don't really know what to say other than when things like these happen, when I don't think Ridley Scott has made a good film since American Gangster. And when that stuff happens, you can assemble a fantastic cast for The Martian, but I'm not excited for Ridley Scott movies anymore. I'm just not. If a good one comes out, awesome, I know he has it in him, but he's not a director that gets me interested in projects.
And man, it's so sad because I remember being so excited for Body of Lies because it was like, ah, Leo DiCaprio, Russell Crowe, this is going to be fantastic. Nope.
Yeah, the best thing that came out of Body of Lies is Mark Strong's got a career boost.
Yeah.
That was the best thing to come out of Body of Lies. And so it's a shame, and I think that Exodus did win the weekend, but I don't see it
barely.
As a film have
barely.
I was going to
like
say
$24 million against a budget of like $140 million. That's
and what
Noah
I was
going to
say
like
is
44, I think.
And what I was going to say is I don't think this movie has legs.
Yeah,
I don't think because Noah did. That was the thing. Noah was a surprise hit, and even then, Paramount's like, "Don't talk about this movie." Paramount was super concerned in the lead up to it about like dealing with family groups and religious groups. The film came out, was a hit, not a massive like groundbreaking hit, but it's a hit, which is surprising considering. I thought you know it'd be too religious to you know woo secular viewers, but not religious enough to lure religious viewers, and it was a success. But Paramount's just like, don't fucking talk. Like, you, Noah, dude, it never happened.
Well, and it's okay. So funny, too, because I remember the lead-up to Noah, like, it was a huge deal. Like, it was on all over the cable news networks. Like, is it anti-religious? And, like, there are rock monsters, and what does this mean? Whereas Exodus makes a case that, you know, Moses was a psychopath, like, crazy, and it doesn't... like, nothing. Nobody's talking about it.
Exactly, because it plays... I mean, that's the thing. Even... They haven't even... They never played that once. They never, ever... again, I don't think the film really does anything with that because it negates it in the first minute.
Yeah.
But even then, the scope of it is what was being sold with Exodus. It's an epic.
Yeah.
You know? It's the epic version. Please don't acknowledge that the Ten Commandments exist. It's our big version for the 21st century. And it's like, no one cares. No one cares. You didn't do anything with it. We need more. We need something different right now. Because I don't care how much you have to spend on visual effects.
Yeah.
Does not interest me at all.
The thing that does make me a little more confident in The Martian is the fact that it's mostly one guy. and it's Matt Damon, who's a fantastic actor. And so, like, you throw as many effects as you want at him, but it's going to be one, like, one actor mostly doing all the work, and Matt Damon's great. So I'm interested. I'm sure that he latched on to ideas of, you know, big sequences and set pieces and stuff. It also has a script by Drew Goddard, which is great.
That's encouraging.
And
it,
again, as someone
will Scott change it? Well, will he? Where will he go?
Yeah, I haven't heard of him bringing another writer on or anything. So I mean, I don't think Goddard's doing much. He's supposedly attached to Sinister Six, so, but I assume he maybe was around for some rewrites.
Again, hey, look, I'm not rooting against Ridley Scott. I still think he has it in him. Unlike, let me put it this way: I'm rooting against Clint Eastwood. Like, I would love it if Clint Eastwood made a good movie, but at this point in Clint Eastwood's career, I think he's taking good movies away from people and just doing jack shit with them. I think Ridley Scott cares, but he's not, the way he's approached, it's just what he chooses to care about, I don't think is making the best film possible. Not, and when I say making the best film possible, I mean telling a story holistically. He's seizing on an aspect.
When you put a rubber baby as fake as that in American Sniper, it is clear that you do not care. You don't care. There's just no effort to be made into making that baby look realistic. And I say this as someone who liked Mystic River and Million Dollar Baby. Like, I think Eastwood has been okay in the past decade, but man, these last few have been just as it's just like he's shitting them out.
I will say, though, that these shits came in on time and under budget.
Oh yeah, and that's what I look for in any movie. Was it
exactly
on time? Was it under budget?
Sold. I also like how AFI was like, it's one of the best films of the year.
Oh god, that baffled me.
Do you even watch movies, AFI? Yeah.
Maybe we'll talk about American Sniper a little later. But
we'll talk about it a little later.
But I do think that Clint Eastwood makes Ridley Scott look good. I think at least, like, you know, clearly in Exodus, Scott was a little lackadaisical about some stuff, but he cared about his effect sequences.
Exactly. And I'm comparing the two because they've been both making films for a while, and they both can crank out one per year.
Yeah, and they're both, what, Scott's 77, and Eastwood is Eastwood in his 80s yet?
Who knows? The man could kill us all with his thumb. It doesn't matter.
That's true.
Yeah, so
he is 84. Eastwood is 84. So Eastwood's almost got a decade on him. So maybe in a decade, Ridley Scott will be making films like Clint Eastwood.
True. That although I think even 10 years, well, we differ on Mystic River and Million Dollar Baby. But
yeah. The
point remains, I haven't given up on Ridley Scott, but his name does not inspire confidence with me. That's what I'll say about Ridley Scott. Do you have anything else to say about Exodus, Ridley Scott?
I don't think so. I mean, this was the year of the two biblical epics. We'll see if it spark. I mean, I don't think this is sparking any trends in Hollywood. Even though Noah was like a secret success. It's almost like, don't tell anyone how well this movie did.
Pretty much.
Exodus is going to be a bomb. So not a bomb, but just kind of come and go. Like it.
And I think the smaller, like religion, like the God, you know, you're left behind. Your God, God is not dead. Your mom's not out. Those smaller Christian films. Will persevere.
I was talking more of...
No, I know. I'm just saying that, like, just to make clear to our listeners, we don't think there are no more religious films left in Hollywood. We're just, in terms of the Hollywood, the big Hollywood side of it. The biblical epic side, yes. Don't look for... I would say don't look for another one anytime soon. That's what I would say.
Though I would have said after Robin Hood, don't look for any Robin Hood movies anytime soon. And we've got an
Hey, that was 5 years ago. That was 5 years ago, though.
That's
that
true.
Was four. That was a while.
I'm very much looking forward to the interconnected Robin Hood universe, the Merry Men.
Oh, sweet God! All right, Adam, what do you recommend for us this week?
My recommendation is a movie that is kind of like Exodus, but better. By Ridley Scott, Kingdom of Heaven, the director's cut. Make sure you're watching this one. And honestly, looking at it now, it seems like maybe a really good screenwriter makes all the difference, because William Monahan wrote Kingdom of Heaven, who won an Oscar for writing The Departed. The first script he sold was another period epic called Tripoli that Scott was supposed to direct, but that never came to fruition, that I've been looking forward to for like a decade now. Kingdom of Heaven is this was Scott's much touted take on the Crusades. You know, like he did, you know, the Gladiator stuff with Gladiator, and now he was going to take on the Crusades. And the Crusades are something that really haven't been touched on a lot in film. And Kingdom of Heaven, the director's cut, I have to keep saying, does it in a really interesting, fascinating, character-driven, but also spectacular way. The battle sequences and stuff are really great. Briefly, Orlando Bloom plays a French village blacksmith who goes to aid the Kingdom of Jerusalem in its defense of the Muslims. And so they're battling to reclaim a city from the Christian, the city of Jerusalem from the Christians. And so there are a number of period battles that are depicted in the film, but again, it's very character focused in the way that Gladiator was, and it does some really interesting things visually. Edward Norton plays a character where you never see his face, which is kind of cool. Cast also includes Ava Green, Jeremy Irons, David Thewlis, Brendan Gleeson. There's a character that I don't think appears, I think maybe briefly appears in the theatrical cut, that has a major subplot in the director's cut that serves to kind of flesh out the characters and stuff like that. And this was, you know, this was coming off of Gladiator and Black Hawk Down. And so Scott, I think, had a, not confidence, but was kind of on a roll and was kind of really eager to get, dig into this stuff. And he does a fantastic job at it. It's a really, really good movie. I can't remember exactly how long how much longer the theatrical cut is. It's extended. Let's see. Looks like it's about 189 minutes, so it's a little longer, but it's definitely worth it, and it's something worth seeing if you're looking for something in the mold of Gladiator, in the mold of a period epic that's also thoughtful and not just kind of like, and here's a set piece, and here's another set piece. Not to say Exodus was that way, but a lot of other period epics. I think the director's cut of Kingdom of Heaven is definitely a good way to go.
I totally agree. My recommendation is what I feel is Scott's last great film, which is 2007's American Gangster. I loved this movie the year it came out. It's sort of weakened with me over the years. I was in love with it when I saw it, and yet I've never felt a lot of urge to return to it, but I still feel it's a strong film that is really a must-see. The plot of American Gangster is based on a true story. Denzel Washington plays Frank Lucas, who is a heroin kingpin in the late 60s, early 70s, who is basically applying modern business techniques to selling his product. Russell Crowe plays a very moral, almost to a fault, cop who leads a DEA investigation to unravel Lucas's operation. And the film goes so many interesting places. It's about crime, it's about race, it's about power, morals, ambition, duty. It covers so much ground, and it does so in an interesting way where I feel like it's a mature film. It's the kind of film that studios really aren't making anymore, that sort of movie for adult, mid-range budget, and just phenomenal performances. Crowe is good. Crowe is very good, but Washington blew me away in this movie. He is just... I think that the Washington character has started to go a bit overboard with, like, Safe House a bit, and to a lesser extent, The Equalizer. Like, I'm a badass. But I feel in American Gangster, it comes off like a real person. He's terrifying, but he's multidimensional. And I feel that it gives us this depth that plays into the realism of the story, but there's also a theatricality to it that makes it very compelling. I think it is an underrated crime film as well. I can understand why it hasn't necessarily stuck with people, but at the same time, I feel that when we look back on Ridley Scott's filmography, this will be one that is considered to have been overlooked, and one that I think people should give another chance to. So my recommendation is American Gangster.
That's one I haven't seen in a long time. And I remember, I thought it was okay when it came out, but that's one I've been meaning to revisit. It's also one that had a crazy development period. There were like a million different directors and actors attached to it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, Scott hops on those projects. If you ever pick up Tales from Development Hell, Ridley Scott is in a lot of them tales. So thanks for listening. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you should follow us on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Matt Goldberg. Adam, where can we find you on Twitter?
At Adam Chitwood.
And guess what we're talking about next week? The Hobbit.
For the
Battle
last
of the Five Armies. For the last fucking time.
The end. I did see Eric Vesp, who is kind of friendly with Jackson and those people down there. I saw him. He tweeted. He said that at, I think, the premiere party or something, the premiere for The Hobbit, he was talking to Philippa Boyens, who's the co-writer on the movies, and she said to him, "I think it's time for us to stop making these movies."
And I agree, Miss Boyens. I agree.
I'm going to see it in 48 frames per second and make things interesting, so I will have some...
That should be. I have seen it, but I have not seen it in 48 frames per second. Are you seeing it in 3D 48 frames per second? Because it was screened at Numathon in 2D 48 frames per second.
If I can see it in 2D, I'll do 2D. It's whatever they're offering, so...
Okay. All right, well, that's what we'll be talking about, so thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back with you next week.